From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 14th day of November, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Hey, let those white tanks roll. I know it's 50 degrees and below for most of those soil temperatures out there. Thanks so much for holding the horses on it, by the way. However, it's had an impact directly on something I'm up to, and I need you to think about this just a little bit. You can get yourself registered for the Farm Assets Conference. I think most of you have been holding off thinking, can I get my anhydrous on or not? Hopefully that'll be all completed by the time we get to next Tuesday. Go ahead and go to the website at willag.org. You can get registered right there and see all the day's events as well. Thanks so much. Coming up in this half hour, of course, we'll talk with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities. We'll take a look at the weather forecast, and we'll get an update of the Ag News segment, too, right here on Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, where he serves as their senior grains analyst. Good afternoon to you, Kurt.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Hey, well, U.S. dollar, I heard this earlier in the day that it had rallied, but boy, I did not realize it had jumped quite so much until I got a look at that number. Over 100 even. What's up with that one?
It is the overall uncertainty, looking at a situation where, once again, the world is running to the U.S. dollar as kind of a safe haven here. Probably economic policy as Trump administration moves forward indicates higher dollar values. We've not been this high for over a year. If you go back to about 2015, we kind of topped out around this 102 level. So it would be interesting if we see this continue to move higher. As a producer, it's something to watch, but I'm inclined as a producer, there's other things to watch or not worry about the dollar in general. From a producer's point of view. Now, if you're an international grain trader, international exporter, or if you have a commodity mutual fund or holdings, you know, world currency values, yes, that is a concern. But in theory, a higher dollar would shrink our value in the export market, making export products, our export product a little bit more expensive. So it's something to watch. I don't know if I'd be fearful or scared of it just yet.
And what do you think's happening in the grain market for the day? Corn ticked down 3 points, and soybeans were down 7.5 in the November as they went off the board, but everything else about a penny or two lower?
A lot of moving parts. Not a whole lot of meat to bite into. The market is correcting, and that started last week. Particularly Asia, it seemed the overnight activity was extreme and volatile. We kind of feel there's some Asian hedging coming in, buying, large Asian speculative buying. Then as we finished out last week there, we saw reports of some commodity funds out of Asia was put into the liquidation mode as their Chinese government comes in and tries to control a little bit what's going on. But the market was toppy, due for a correction. We're going through that correction process. Technically, March corn, this 342 area, is 62% back down to the low we made back there at the first part of October. January beans is 974.75, just a little bit below today's low is 62%. Back down to the late September low at 940.5. So the market's kind of doing what it needs to do, retrace. We just need to hold these levels here and see some more demand come into the marketplace. We're shipping out what we sold. Today's export shipments show we shipped out over 102 million bushels of beans, 24 million bushels of corn, and 7 million bushels of wheat. Now, the corn and wheat numbers were on the light side, but seasonally, those shipments really don't pick up till after the first of the year and through here. So as we move into tomorrow, The most popular saying is Turnaround Tuesday. Tomorrow, we'll be looking for the monthly NOPA crush report. Trade's expecting to see about 160.5 million bushels beans being crushed for the month of October. The old record was 158.8. That was set in October 2015. We could break that record. As a whole, it would be the eighth highest crush level for any month at all. This afternoon's harvest progress report told real shockers they're expecting corn harvest to be about 95% complete, beans in this 97-98% complete. We have favorable weather for the most part across the Midwest. Good to excellent category for our second crop of corn here throughout the Midwest. Volunteer corn is probably going to be zero with the freeze we've seen here. So for those who did see some tassels, don't count on that. But the good excellent category for wheat will be watched once again, especially in that southeast. Got some major fires going on in Tennessee, Carolina, but on further south in there, there's some soft redwater wheat. It's getting a little dry, so not to a critical point yet, but we might see that good excellent category soft red winter wheat may drop a percent or two, Todd.
We've had a few days since USDA released last week's crop production numbers that showed the western part of the Corn Belt, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, all up. The Dakotas both up 17 bushels in North Dakota, higher. But most of those states up 3 or 4 bushels to the acre for corn, nationally up 1.9 bushels to the acre. Not many were really expecting this. However, have you had time to confirm or deny that those western U.S. Corn Belt numbers are getting bigger?
Visiting with producers in general, they're all pleasantly surprised. So now that that's out, and you following up on that, Todd, you did an excellent job with looking into that, and I commend you that because you jumped right into that, and that kind of explains your commentary there last week kind of explains what they were looking at. And how
oh, thank you. That got lucky. That's part of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. You know, all the agencies are there, and I must tell you, most of our listeners will know Joe Prasaki probably from the All Day Ag Outlook or from being on the air with us. And while I didn't have him on with us that day, when I asked the question about North Dakota to Mr. Parsons, he said something about them not having objective yields, and I followed up on that, and he just stopped. And he went over to talk to Joe because Joe's the one who's in St. Louis that takes in all of the data. He gets all the ears is what it amounts to. So if they have objective data yield, he would have known it and had a discussion with him real quickly to make sure that what he had just told me was correct and confirmed, in fact, that they didn't have any objective yield plots in North Dakota simply because they don't raise enough corn. And that's the reason they were up 17 bushels, because in the prior monthly report, you know, farmers went with what they thought it would be, and then they were really surprised when they saw the yield monitor. So thank you so much for that. Speaking of that, next week, Kurt, Pete will be there in a booth at the Farm Assets Conference, kind of looking forward to having everybody around. And we're going to go through a whole bunch of things on that day, Tuesday, the 22nd at the Farm Assets Conference. Sorry you can't be there. Wish you could.
Yeah, unfortunately, I had a prior commitment, but I hate missing that program you put together. It's a knockout program, a lot of good speakers there, a lot of important people who's going to have booths there that might not be on the program, too. So yeah. It's a real good event to attend to get some ideas, because I know I've been personally working with people trying to get you from point A to point B, and hopefully there'll be a lot of good information there to work off of, Todd.
That's what we strive to do, as long as guys can get their anhydrous ammonia on. I think that'll happen. I got to tell you, Kurt, that it's a little scary for me today because I'm watching the numbers thinking they haven't signed up, and I'm fairly positive it's because they've been really good about not running in the fields and waiting until the soil temps have dropped. And they should have about a week or week and a half in the field by the time we get to the next Tuesday. So I need to get them registered today, and I need them to do it now. That'll make me feel a lot better. Hey, thanks so much for being with us today. I do appreciate it, Kurt.
Very good. Take care, Todd.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. in today's agricultural news. Let's start with something that comes from Politico. It obtained a list of talking points that offer a roadmap of how President-elect Donald Trump's agriculture secretary could shape agricultural policies, including the sweeping promise to defend American agriculture against its critics, particularly those who have never grown or produced anything beyond a backyard tomato plant. The document, provided by a source close to the Trump transition, was created for members of Trump's Ag Advisory Committee and appears to date to the campaign. Nevertheless, Politico says it offers a host of policy pledges, from suggesting a shift back to conventional agriculture to promises for the Trump White House to be an active participant in writing the next farm bill, to fighting the so-called good food movement and undoing Obama-era agricultural and environmental policies. All segments of the agriculture industry will have a say in the development of any legislation or rulemaking done or supported by the executive branch, it says. The Trump administration will kill the unlawful waters of the U.S. rule, it says, and choose an EPA administrator who's friendly to farmers. The Trump-Pence administration will use the best available science to determine appropriate regulations for the food and agriculture sector. Agriculture will not be regulated based upon the latest trend on social media, it says. Well, death to the death tax. The documents also promise to eliminate the estate tax, protect private property, water, and mineral rights for farmers and ranchers, and enforce the Interstate Commerce Clause to keep individual states from dictating policy for food growers. It also features an immigration reference. Mr. Trump recognizes the unique labor challenges facing the American farm community, it says, and will include farmers and ranchers in the process of determining the best possible immigration policies. We'll stay in agriculture or USDA, but move to the other side of the ledger, still with somebody who is on President-elect Trump's Agricultural Advisory Committee. House Ag Committee Chairman Mike Conaway isn't wasting any time in holding another hearing on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. That's the latest in a series that is starting to resemble an extra innings baseball game, apparently. The session planned for Wednesday will review opportunities for improving access to food. It is the first SNAP hearing since Donald Trump's election victory, and it doesn't look like there will be much of an appetite to split the farm bill next year, even with a Republican in the White House, should Conaway decide at the end of his review that there should be separate legislation for farm programs and food programs. Democrats are positioned to block the measure in the Senate. Republicans would likely need 60 votes in that case. They'll have at least 51 and possibly one more. Louisiana has a runoff next month. What's more, top Trump policy advisor Sam Clovis has said Trump isn't big on dividing the farm bill. And finally today, we'll stay with the administration and just what it might do. The New York Times has put together a possible list of new ag secretaries. The New York Times included four possible candidates for the position in a broader story about Trump's cabinet that ran over the weekend. Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, National Council of Farmers Cooperative CEO Chuck Connor, Texas Ag Commissioner Sid Miller, and former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue are on the list. However, at least there was one that wasn't listed by the Times, Charles Herbster from Nebraska, who leads Donald Trump's Agricultural Advisory Committee. And that's a look at today's Ag News. Free University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, last week, when USDA raised the size of the U.S. corn crop, there was a collective gasp in farm country. Prices are already very low, and an even bigger crop wasn't expected. All attention now has turned to how this mammoth supply of corn will be used in hopes consumption can chew through that mountain of corn. Well, U.S. farmers are harvesting their largest corn crop on record at some 15.2 billion bushels. It's the Western Corn Belt that really came through this year with big yields. The November USDA crop production report shows that even in the last month, those yields got bigger, up 3 bushels to the acre in Nebraska and South Dakota, 4 bushels higher in Minnesota, and a 17-bushel to the acre increase in North Dakota that came about once farmers, the only real source for yields in that state, took a look at the yield monitors in their combines. Well, the increased yield for the corn crop creates a scenario, says University of Illinois agricultural economist Todd Hubbs, where the ending stocks-to-use ratio is 16.4% under current consumption projections. That's a level, he notes, that has not been seen since the 05-06 marketing year, and while the corn for export and ethanol numbers seem sound, the feed and residual number for Hubs is a concern.
They've had the feed and residual use projection at 5.65 billion bushels for the last few reports. It's a big number. It's 10% up over what it was last year. And with the increased livestock numbers we've seen, it sounds reasonable, but when you start thinking about some of the mitigating factors surrounding feed use, the unseasonably warm fall we've had a lot more corn crushed for ethanol, which means more distillers grains out in the market, combined with China restricting imports on distillers grains, so there'll be a lot more distillers grains for feed. You start to think about these numbers, even though they're strong livestock inventory numbers, these other mitigating factors make you want to give feed a good look as we move into this marketing year.
Well, think of it this way. There are a lot of corn acres and a lot of ethanol plants west of the Mississippi River. Iowa, Nebraska, and Minnesota are three of the top five corn-producing states in the nation. There are also a lot of wheat acres and a lot of cattle and a lot of hogs and more than a few poultry operations. Those birds and animals eat a lot of feed, but the ranchers and farmers make decisions based on economics. Clearly, it's been cheaper to leave cattle on pasture this warmer than average fall, and it may be cheaper to feed wheat and DDGs rather than corn. We won't really know the impact until the grain stocks report is released January 12, says Todd Hubbs.
The grain stocks report's the only way you can back out the numbers to think about how much feed's being used. We know how much ethanol has been crushed and the corn used for that. We know how we have a good idea about export numbers, and you can back out the numbers thing about how much feed's been used over the first quarter of the marketing year. So on January 12th of 2017, the report's going to come out giving us the December 1st stock reports, and that can give us a first indication of just how strong feed use is.
So while a deserved focus has been placed on corn exports, corn production, and corn use for ethanol, a major portion of each corn crop is fed to livestock. Given the larger projected increases for feed and residual usage this marketing year, monitoring those projections will be really important to price discovery. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.